Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Thursday, February 3rd, 2022. Sudan's military leader says his government will implement the Juba Comprehensive Peace Agreement.
Within this week, we want to see all the forces vacate the town and assemble in their respective areas.
And authorities in South Sudan's Upper Nile state have detained suspects behind the killing of a Sudanese trader.
Some people entered his shop while he was there. So he quarreled with them, and I think they were wanting money. So through the struggle, they killed him.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudan's military leader says his government will implement the Juba Comprehensive Peace Agreement and restore security and stability across the country. General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan instructed the formation of a joint forces for the protection of civilians in Darfur, as stipulated in the Juba peace deal. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Khartoum.
General al-Burhan, who heads the Joint High Council for the Security Arrangement in the Juba Peace Agreement, arrived in North Darfur State Wednesday, along with top military leaders of armed groups who are signatories to the peace deal. He chaired the Third Council's meeting in Al-Fashir and formed the Joint Forces for the Protection of Civilians in the Darfur region. The meeting resolved that all armed forces should vacate the towns and assemble in designated areas and allow the Joint Forces to take security control of civilians in the major towns across Darfur. Speaking to reporters shortly after the meeting, al-Burhan said armed forces should leave the towns and assemble at designated areas.
Within this week, we want to see all the forces vacate the town and assemble in their respective areas. As government, we will strive to provide them with the necessary needs which will allow them to stay away from the towns. There are other negative armed forces which are trying to cause havoc. We have jointly agreed to fight them and prevent them from causing insecurity for our citizens.
The Sudanese transitional government and nine armed groups signed the Juba peace agreement in October 2020, mediated by the South Sudan's government in Juba. Under the agreement, a 12,000-strong joint force was supposed to be formed within 90 days to provide security for civilians in Darfur. Al-Burhan says the joint forces should be in place by next week.
I would like to assure our people in Al-Fashir and other towns that we are keen to work together as one people to maintain security for our citizens. We will also ensure that our brothers and sisters who have come back to resettle, that they live in peace and stability. Let's all work together to achieve security and maintain stability for our citizens.
Al-Burhan says the current transitional government is committed to fully implementing the Juba Comprehensive Peace Agreement to prevent further deadly violence in the area.
This delay has affected the peaceful process and the Juba Peace Agreement, and it has affected our people here in Darfur and the entire country. Therefore, we were keen that we all agree on a permanent solution so that we avoid the repeated sorrowful and regrettable violence that has been occurring now and then.
At least five people are reported injured during a protest staged by hundreds of Darfuri internally displaced persons in Al-Fashir town during al-Burhan's visit. The police used tear gas to disperse the protest. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus via a messaging application from Darfur, Adam Rijal, the official spokesman for the General Coordination of the Displaced Persons and Refugees, says the government is not serious about implementing the peace agreement. Rijal says the people of Darfur are protesting the continued killings and lootings allegedly carried out by government militia in Darfur.
These militias felt that there is no entity that will continue to report on their atrocities independently and in an organized way. There is no one that would write a regular report to the UN Security Council. That is why they continue with their brutality against the people. The Sudanese government should take responsibility for these mistakes.
Several renewed tribal clashes erupted among different groups across the Darfur region shortly after the joint United Nations and African Union peacekeeping mission ended its mandate in December 2020. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Authorities in South Sudan's Upper Nile State say they have detained four people suspected of being behind the killing of a Sudanese businessman in Longichok County. The police commissioner of Upper Nile State says the trader was killed during an attack by armed robbers. Upper Nile's state minister has condemned the killing and called for calm as authorities investigate the incident. Dengai Deng reports for VOA from Bor.
Upper Nile State Police Commissioner Major General Chola Temujongeth says a group of suspected armed robbers broke into a shop belonging to Sudanese businessman Ibrahim Abdallah in Longichok County on Tuesday. A team says the armed assailants fought with Abdallah, then killed him.
Some people entered his shop while he was there. So he quarreled with them, and I think they were wanting money. So through the struggle, they kill him.
General Tim says the slain trader lived in the area for almost a decade. The police commissioner says four people have been apprehended in connection with Abdallah's death.
Those people are captured. Of course, these practices, it is a crime, and nobody should be. So it is the court who will be the last step to look into the crime that they convicted.
A team says the suspects will be arraigned in court once the investigations are completed. Upper Nile State Information Minister Luke Sadala condemned Abdallah's killing and offered his condolences to the Sudanese community in Upper Nile State. The minister is calling for calm, adding that state authorities are working to improve security for residents and foreign nationals residing in the state.
In Capital Melkal, we are doing, because we collected all the police from the from northern counties. They brought from Rangin 14 or 15, from Oban 15, from Malut 14. They inspected here in Melkal. Here in Melkal, no problem. Situation is become good now for the situation of the. They are now protecting. We are protecting them, no problem here. Only one incident happened in my Lungchuk. But all the situation for the foreigners in ever country, no problem. The government is protecting them, no problem.
Umar Asukav, the leader of the Sudanese community in Upper Nile State, condemned the killing and says he was shocked to hear of Ibrahim Abdallah's death. Ashukav is urging state authorities to protect traders.
I would like to say that the government should work and improve security of area so that the civilians and business people remain in peace. Now that this incident has happened, I urge the government to open its eyes 100%. If traders do not go to where people are living, their lives will be difficult for the people, so the business people should be protected.
Ashukav urges Upper Nile State authorities to bring the suspects involved in Ibrahim Abdallah's killing to a court of law. He says authorities should assign police to conduct night patrols in order to prevent attacks on traders in the future. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
Uganda and Tanzania signed the final investment decision Tuesday, paving way for commercial oil production in Uganda with a target of getting the first petroleum out of the ground in 2025. Catherine Nambi reports for VOA from Kampala.
Among the major initial projects is the 1,440-kilometer East African crude oil pipeline, EAPCO, from Hoima District in Uganda to Tanga Port in Tanzania. Completion is planned in 36 months. The other projects are in the two oil fields of Tirenga and Kingfisher in Uganda's Albertine region. Oil companies, including Sinopec and Total Energies, are expected to inject about $10 million into infrastructure to kickstart commercial production. Chen, Zobiao is the president of CNOOC.
This is a step towards unlocking more opportunities for investment and development in the Uganda and the whole region. The Kingfisher project is expected to fetch an in-country value of US$1.6 billion, and US$400 billion will be for the local service provider.
Patrick Pouyan is the chief executive officer of Total Energies. He says some construction is already ongoing.
Tangible progress has already been made on the ground with some land acquisitions, and already some civil works are starting on site, and some engineering and procurement has been kicked off locally and around the world. But from today, with the FID, the project will fully enter into the construction phase, and we will award firmly all the main contracts.
Pouyan says such investments are highly needed, especially amidst soaring oil prices.
The development is transformational for both countries, and our ambition is to make it an exemplary project in terms of shared prosperity, in-country value, and sustainable development. The current spike in global oil price demonstrates that the lack of investment in this sector could have some consequences for customers. We need to launch new developments to compensate for the decline in the production around the world of existing fields and to meet the demand.
The FID is a culmination of a series of negotiations between the governments of Uganda and Tanzania and between the two governments and oil companies. Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni and Tanzania's Vice President Philip Mpango witnessed the signing in Kampala. Mpango is hopeful the oil projects will spur development in the region.
The two countries are projected to realize a record level of foreign direct investment flows to the tune of US$3.5 billion over the period 2022 to 2025, which is an increase of over 60%. The impact of such massive investment include employment estimated at more than 10,000 jobs, foreign exchange earnings. The pipeline will also provide business opportunities in various sectors, including construction, energy and the like, which will eventually create a trickle-down effect and thus contributing to development of local content.
Museveni, on the other hand, thinks once operational, the YAPCO will create an avenue for oil exploration in other East African countries.
This same oil here is also in Eastern Congo. The same Albert Valley, there is petroleum in South Sudan. I think our Tanzanian brothers are also looking for petroleum in the Lake Eyasi area. There's also likely to be petroleum in Burundi. So this East African crude pipeline may end up being a nucleus for the East African crude effort, not only just for this oil of Uganda.
Uganda anticipates exploration of over 230,000 barrels of oil per day once commercial production commences. 200,000 barrels from Tirenga oil field and about 35,000 barrels from Kingfisher. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, what is happening at the Olympic Games in China? Stay tuned for more after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your definition of the life well lived?
When you accomplish your set goals. Like, for example, when you say, I must finish university, even if you don't work, as long as you're finished, there is no problem. Even if I die today after finish.
When someone is living a godly way, focused on achieving his or her own goals, and trying to be morally upright.
Though it's not everybody that actually have a dream, but there are some, this set of people that have a dream and then working towards to achieve that dream.
A life well lived is one where one is able to fulfill his dreams, his aspirations, his goals, all that he wants before he dies.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Guinea-Bissau's President Omaro Siseko Mbalo has said an attempted coup on Tuesday may have been linked to drug trafficking. Lucy Felder of Reuters has more.
Heavy gunfire had sounded near a government compound where Omaro Siseko Mbalo had been chairing a cabinet meeting.
When I was elected President of the Republic, I promised to fight two things: corruption and drug trafficking. And this is also linked to that. And I knew what the price was, but the fight continues.
Guinea-Bissau is known as a major transit point for Latin American cocaine headed for Europe. That has contributed to the West African country's instability. It's seen 10 coups or attempted coups since independence from Portugal in 1974. Only one democratically elected president has completed a full term. Mbalo said it was not a failed coup, but an assassination attempt. State radio said on Wednesday that at least six people had been killed, two members of the presidential guard and four assailants.
UN agencies in Malawi have started providing aid to victims from the tropical storm Anna, which killed scores of people across southeastern Africa and left tens of thousands homeless. The UN Children's Agency UNICEF has provided personal hygiene and water treatment kits to approximately 15,000 people. But Malawi's President Lazarus Chikwera says more assistance is needed, as Lamik Masena reports. Chikwawa, Malawi.
The latest report from Malawi's Department of Disaster Management says the floods killed 33 people, displaced more than 100,000, and affected nearly 200,000 households in the country. The storm also damaged at least 19 health facilities, destroying medicines and cold chain equipment. Muhammad Faw is UNICEF's regional director for East and Southern Africa. He is in Malawi visiting flood-hit areas.
For the moment, our focus, of course, is on life-saving commodities, namely those that help for water, those help for sanitation, non-food item, probably also some tent, latrines, cleaning stuff also, because I'm sure that with the water level dropping, resettlement will be a challenge.
Four notes that the destruction of water and sanitation facilities puts children and their families at risk of waterborne diseases such as cholera. Meanwhile, the World Food Programme announced Wednesday that it has set aside an initial amount of $500,000 for relief assistance to the flood victims. Paul Turnbull is the WFP country director in Malawi.
As part of our immediate response, WFP is providing corn soya blend to some 21,000 households, around 95,000 people, in the four most affected districts of Chikwawa, Mulanje, Nsanje, and Palombe. Distribution started yesterday, the 1st of February.
Tanibu added the WFP is currently prioritizing displaced people living in temporary shelters as it looks for additional resources to scale up its response. The head of the Department of Disaster Management, Charles Galemba, told a press conference Tuesday that the relief efforts are hampered by lack of funding despite several government appeals for financial assistance. During his tour to affected areas Tuesday, President Lazarus Chakwera called for more assistance to help thousands of Malawians affected by floods in over half of the country's 28 districts. Chakwera says as we continue asking for more assistance from our partners, we should also make sure that in our national budget this year, we should allocate some to help rebuild public infrastructures destroyed by the storm. Tropical storm Anna also killed at least 20 people in Mozambique and 48 people in Madagascar. The Malawian president said he will soon meet with African Union heads of state to ask for support in aiding areas affected by the storm. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Chikwawa, Malawi.
The 2020 Beijing Olympics kicks off tomorrow, but even before the opening ceremony, the Games face some hurdles. VOA's Penelope Paolo has more.
The International Olympic Committee has the honor to announce the host city of the Olympic Winter Games 2022. Beijing.
91 nations participate in the Beijing Olympics with a total of 109 events across 15 sports. In Beijing, Olympic officials have imposed strict protocols to prevent the spread of COVID. Tickets will not be sold to the public. Beijing has announced a closed-loop system where athletes and others involved in the Olympics will work, compete, eat and sleep without coming into contact with the general public. All vaccinated participants can move freely in games-related areas by a dedicated transport system. Unvaccinated athletes will have to spend 21 days in quarantine ahead of the games. Domestic and international participants will be tested daily. But COVID-19 is not the only hurdle for the Beijing Olympics. According to the Washington Post, a coalition of international activists has pressed for a boycott of what they are calling the #2022 Genocide Olympics, citing China's treatment of Uyghurs and other ethnic minorities in China's northern province of Xinjiang. According to China's state-owned broadcaster CCTV, Chinese Ministry of Foreign Affairs spokesperson Wang Wenbin criticized the politicization of the Beijing Olympics. Despite the global outcry against Beijing's human rights abuses, neither the apolitical International Olympic Committee nor NBCU, the Olympics' exclusive broadcaster in the U.S., will take a stand against Beijing, says Andrew Zimbalist, professor of economics at Smith College.
They all have massive investments in these games, and they want them to come off well. They need to cooperate with each other.
Zimbalist, who has published several books on the economics of the Olympic Games, points out that China wields great influence on international markets, which do not want to ruffle Beijing's feathers.
On the one hand, you have markets like the United States, where people want you to be uttering phrases and following policies that are congruent with human values. On the other hand, you've got a country that's violating those values. But it's, you know, you're selling $15 billion of goods to them every year, or you actually have an investment as a partner in some of their activities. And so how do you steer course in between those two things? It's delicate.
According to Variety.com, NBCU is facing a huge challenge on attracting eyeballs to the event, not only because of China's human rights violations, but also because 6 months after the Summer Olympics in Tokyo, spectators are going through what it calls Olympic Games fatigue. However, Zimbalist says most viewers do not bring a political mindset to the questions of whether they are going to follow the Olympic Games. They do it, he says, for the thrill of the games, the competition, and the teams they root for. Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
This week, Voice of America is marking 8 years of broadcasting to the world. Join me in wishing VOA a happy birthday. That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now end the show with Kenyan musician Musa Juma and the song New Sudan.
Viva New Sudan. Sudan Upia. Upia. Tokele pi Sudan in Mamilambo. Personalities, Southern region. Joke de pi Sudan in Mamilambo. Abanai personalities, Southern region.
Karango tiyo matek sana kafika. Zimbeo kedo malich sana kafika.
Oh, oh, oh.
Kelijo kedo matek sana kafika. Acholi koda sande kinupini. Shiluku koda madigiti kalukutubi. Kanyanyalita Joseph Lakongo. Generali Joseph Lakongo.
Oscar. Toke de pili Sudani mamila mwonele. Equatorial personalities, Southern region. Equatorial personalities, Southern region.
Daktari, Justin Tiomatek sana. Masani, Kama Tiomatek sana. Wakili, Peter Tiomatek sana. Lukutu, Agnes Tiomatek sana. Malpino, Olivia Tiomatek sana. Anyango kedo malich sana Afrika. Anyanyalita Joseph Lakongo. Generali Joseph Lakongo.
Nebet. Joke nepi Sudani mamila mbonge. Bargasel personalities Southern region. Joke nepi Sudani mamila mbonge. Bargasel personalities Southern region.
Ngeliaba Osuru Tiamatek sana. William Nyon Tiamatek sana. Mokweye Joni Tiamatek sana. Salvae Kir Tiamatek sana. Macharo Tiamatek sana Afrika. Anyanyalita Joseph Lakongo. Generali Joseph Lakongo.
Sab sab. Joke de pi Sudani mamila mbonge. Abanai personalities Southern region.
We've been listening to Musa Juma and the song New Sudan. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your phones, homes, and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Naila Molo Dingana Sungeri kutoka Kenya Kisumu Anyanyalita Joseph Lakongo.